This is the Back Porch Education Podcast, a conversation about educating ourselves and those we love. Today on the slate, the College Board's adversity score. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon. Steve, I know you're happy to hear it, man. I don't have a poem today.
Oh, well, this should be exciting to listeners as well as to myself. You know what that makes me want to do? It makes me want to write a poem about Jason not having a poem. But
oh, yeah.
Poetry.
That's good. We can read that next time.
Well, poetry being what it is, it's not very good when it's impromptu. So it does take a little talent. So I'll have to go find my poetry talent first. But we could just leap right into things then.
Yeah, wow. What are we going to do with all this extra time?
Well, we're, of course, as a recorded podcast, not talking even as people listen. We're putting something down today that's somewhat, well, the topic comes from the moment. Just recently, those of us who follow education saw the new announcement from College Board that they would be introducing an adversity score, not visible to the student, only visible to those who use entrance exams, that being the entrance or admissions counselors of universities and colleges. But that on a scale of 1 to 100, the person reviewing the SAT score of a given student would also be shown a score indicating the types of obstacles that student is having to overcome in order to apply to college, socioeconomic, cultural, that sort of thing. And it's, of course, met with a lot of discussion. And we said, well, we're an education podcast. Let's converse about this.
Yeah, we like to discuss. So just to kind of round out the details here. Essentially this score will be an additional number given to admissions counselors. So, you know, when they see a student's application, instead of saying Jason, you know, SAT score of 1200, now it'll say Jason, SAT score 1200, adversity score 50, right? And that number is between 1 and 100, one being very little adversity, and 100 being the greatest adversity. So it's not based on anything like personal in your life. It's just based on,
it's mostly demographics, right?
It's just based on neighborhood. Yeah, exactly. Demographics from your high school and from, your neighborhood, your census data, however that ends up, playing out. So if you and your next door neighbor go to the same high school, you're going to have the same adversity score, even if your house costs 10 times what theirs cost, or, you know, whatever. None of that, like family situation, race, none of that is factored. It's just, well, there's a lot of data points, but it's all like crime and median income and that.
Yeah, and if there was ever a good moment for us as educators to sort of take a deep breath and say, hey, here's a good reason for us to continue to hold standards high in the classroom, because our society really needs to continue to pursue meaningful conversation about something. The furor that flew into the faces of everyone as soon as this came out, reaction galore. Asking me, you know, is this going to lower my SAT score if I don't have enough adversity or something? Or what is it? There was a lot of not listening going on. And then, to try and clarify, like the president of the college board, I think, has been quoted as saying, this is how to bring race into it without bringing race into it. Now, that doesn't help, guy.
No, that doesn't help.
With a clear picture of what they're trying to do, like almost any snapshot of the moment, we almost always focus immediately on this moment instead of, you know, cause and effect, right? One of the great common topics that we should do a episode on what the five common topics are at some point, but one of the universal questions, one of the universal starting points for questions is the notion of cause and effect, of causation. Where did this come from? What does this imply? What does this moment indicate has been happening prior to this? And where does it send us? And I think that's what we want to chat about today is how did we get here to the perceived need of an adversity score? And what are we to think about this? I know we know that a decent part of our audience are parents trying to educate their children well. What do we do with this? We've now got to deal with this. What does it imply?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I think for us in particular, like I don't want to read stuff from articles, even though I've read several, you know, different people's takes on what's going on. If we're going to read anything, I think it should just be from the SAT's website, from College Board's website, just to kind of, you know, play it straight. But I think two things that I would point out that everybody agrees on, right, is that, first of all, that like overcoming adversity is a good thing, right? Like for a student to overcome adversity, hey, that's great. Like, wow, good job, kid. The other thing that I would think everybody agrees on in reading those articles is that this score is a bad representation of that. That the number doesn't do what it wants to do, what the College Board is hoping that it will do, and what they're saying that it can do. So this has been a pilot program, like, already.
Right.
I saw that Yale has used it for several years, you know, and I think everybody's upset about it. That's the thing. Like, no matter what side you're on, everybody's really kind of up in arms about it. And I think it's a good thing to sort of say, like, okay, we're all upset. What's the issue behind why we're all upset? Right. Like, because we all agree overcoming adversity is good. So why are we then all upset by this?
Well, right. And I think back behind it too is this question of how do we decide who education is available to?
Yeah.
Is it just purely the person that scores the highest on the test should get the most favor in admissions? Are there other factors that should come into play? Does a diversity score help that? And if not, what would? But, you know, this is a really old conversation in Western education. Because good education has always been hard to come by. And so the notion especially I think the Roman educational world was that good education's reserved for the few people that really need it. And, you know, the average poor, what do they need an education for? They're just supposed to be working. Mm-hmm. And now it's almost flipped, right? The American notion is that everybody benefits from education, not just at the level of a citizen who can vote more intelligently, but in particular at the level of the good life, that education is the ticket to a better life, and therefore the people the worst off want that ticket the worst. You know, mm-hmm. it's really the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is a pretty good analogy for American education. We want that golden ticket that'll get us up and out of the borough into the palace.
Mm-hmm.
And many people think not just getting an education, but getting the best education is going to put me in the best place for that.
Yeah. We'll talk about sort of what this might signal. One of the first things I noticed about this score, one of my first thoughts about it was that this adversity score is the College Board's attempt to get out of a problem that they have created for themselves, right? But it's not just the College Board. It's education in general. It's society in general. We are moderns, you know, by and large. And the modern problem is that we think data will solve everything. And so when we have a number, when we have all of our data and we still have a problem, our solution is more data. And so, you know, before the SAT was ever used, people applied to college and got into college, and the SAT didn't exist. So there was some way of doing it before this magical number came along to sort everybody. Well, that magical number isn't working anymore. It's not doing the trick that we all sort of made believe it was doing. And as a result, we have said, hey, how about another number?
Yeah. You're reminding me of like a Penn and Teller trick, right? You know, the little three cups and the ball, and you're supposed to follow it right and tell them which. So typically that trick is done with heavy, usually metal cups, because they don't want anybody to think that it's the material that the cups are made out of. They're metal, nothing can penetrate it. But they'll often use, to keep from giving things away, they'll often use a very soft ball of some sort, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for a while, college admissions was this, the student is trying to figure out which cup the ball is under, and he can't tell because he has no giveaways.
Right, right. But he hasn't learned the game.
Right, at some point, the SAT has become so familiar, and there are so many people, such as our dear friend Jason Dolbert,
yes,
who help people learn how to take the SAT well,
mm-hmm.
that it's almost like the ball got replaced with a ball bearing,
right?
And now you easily know by the ringing of the ball bearing against the metal cup which cup has the ball bearing in it.
Yeah, that's right.
And so it's almost like, well, of course, and so suddenly the whole purpose was to narrow the number of applicants coming into college, and everybody's got a reasonably high score on the SAT.
Mm-hmm.
And so do we change the nature of the test? They've done that several times.
Yes, they have.
What can we do? And the assumption was that one of the things we can't tell from a test score is where this student is coming from. And I want to go back to what you said in the first segment. I agree that I don't think this score is going to tell them what they want to know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fascinating that we believe someone's place, someone's geography means something about them.
Mm-hmm.
That specific idea... I agree with a great deal that placedness, being of a certain place, makes you a certain kind of person.
Okay.
And if you're trying to move from one place to another, you are at a disadvantage, right? I've moved about the country several times,
mm-hmm.
and every time I've got to become familiar with the new place, I'm at a disadvantage. I get lost easy. People will say things like, where are you from? They know I'm not from around
right.
there.
Not here.
You know? Yeah. So I don't begrudge the desire to try and figure out where is this student coming from to help me decide how well they'll do here at the university. I just don't, I think that we default, as I think you're saying in this segment, we default to the scientific data, so to speak, that that a number will give us trends and patterns. And if we can make sense of them, we can make sense of numbers more easily than we can make sense of other input.
Or of humans, right? Like ultimately that's where I come in on this, or that's where I sort of land, is like in assessment conversations with my colleagues at school, I would always come back to this thing where I would just say, look, just tell me the best way to reduce a human to a number and I'll do it. Right. Yeah. 'Cause I would grow tired of the assessment conversations that I actually think are super important and you need to have and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm not saying that was a terribly mature thing of me to say. I'm just saying that is what the SAT is trying to do, right? Like, or at least that's what we believe it to do, right? Like reduce a human to their aptitude, to their college readiness. And so when we get something like this, like an adversity score, and it doesn't make sense to us, well, it's kind of our own faults for trusting the test that much in the first place.
Well, right. At least two things come out of that statement on your part. One is there are a group of people, people involved in college entrance, who are asking themselves the question, what is most important for college readiness? And both the ACT and the SAT seem to have, generally speaking, boiled it down to two abilities, which is fascinating to me as someone who studied classical education a lot. Mm-hmm. They basically said you got to be an artful user of word and number, right? that there's an right. English portion.
Which doesn't sound revolutionary.
Not at all. It almost sounds like there's these seven liberal arts. But anyway, so I'm not illegitimatizing in my mind the things that are being measured. Can a student read and write, and can they handle numbers, the math score and the English score? I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
but they're saying there's more to it than just that, because we need this other score to indicate to us things that would be useful that this score won't reveal to us. The other compelling problem here is, I mean, if you and I were solving this reasonably, wouldn't we just say sit down and talk with each applicant? And if you're a good admissions counselor and you have enough time with the applicant, you'll know if they fit the profile of what you're trying to recruit into the school or not. Is this a,
absolutely,
is this a Baird man or not, you know? And there lies the problem, right?
Yeah.
We've created for ourselves such an influx, such a fascination with and a fear of not getting into college. Everybody's got to go to college. And not only do we want them in college, we want them in a reputable college. We want them in as good a college as they can get in. And, you know, the test scores these days are not only determining whether they get in or not, but it's also in part determining what kind of financial aid they might be.
Oh yeah, it's huge.
Scholarships and there's money attached to this, and so there's no way 100,000 people applying for 1,000 spots at a prestigious university can be interviewed like that.
No.
And there it is, right? Yeah, but we can get a score. Yep. 100,000 of them can take the same test at the same time, ask the same questions, and we'll know that this group here, this large group, just didn't score high enough to be considered. Mm-hmm. Sorry, guys.
Yep.
Well, and thus the the next problem, right, is, well, what's behind they're not scoring high enough?
Right. Yeah. And so I have a, this is a fascinating question to me because, like you mentioned, I'm not a magician. I don't make the test, but I know how it works, and I tutor students in how to beat it. And so, like, the first thing that I say to a student when I start tutoring them, the very first thing is, here's what this is. This is not a test. It's a game. It's like a sport. And I'm really good at this game. I'm so good at this game that your parents are going to pay me money to teach you how to play this game. Because if you play this game well enough, if you play like I show you how to play, then the colleges will really like the way that you play this game, and they will give you money because you know how to play the game. So learn how to play this game with me. And then we start our SAT or our ACT tutoring. And it works.
I think that, and that's the amazing thing to me, is not that Jason Dorworth can teach somebody how to play a game, but that when you or someone else does teach, it really does work. And I think that's a great place to come back to, is talking about what the adversity score is going to do to the game.
Yeah.
How it might change it, and how we might, I don't know, take advantage of the disadvantaged score.
Right, right.
But what can we do about this? So before the break, we were talking about the fact that rather than viewing this as a test, the SAT, ACT game is begun, and a student learns the rules, learns how to perform better. It's almost like a sports trainer.
Yeah.
Jason and others like him. I know we have several people at my school who stay after school and coach students on a number of things, right? There's improving their knowledge of what's going to be tested. That's the obvious tutorial, but there's also how the test works. Should you leave blanks? Should you answer
right.
Everything? Is guessing good or not, etc.? And you were fascinating me because you sounded for a moment like you were a coach giving a pep talk to a player.
Yeah.
You know, son, if you perform well tonight, there's college scouts in the crowd, and they're
right.
Gonna like what they see. And they'll pay you, they'll give you a full ride to college. Come on, boy, load them up, you know.
Yep, yep.
And it sounds like the exact same talk.
It is.
to an academic instead of an athletic,
yep.
Right? That there's a game afoot here, and the really good players play. Maybe you can spend a minute or two talking about the old game, the just basic test scores, before I ask the next logical question after that, which is, what do you think of the new game?
How
can we game the new game?
Sure. Okay. So let me take the easier one first. Let me take your first question, and that is, how do you game the test? So the first thing that you mentioned, Steve, when you said, when you were talking about the test, like, oh, how to improve your score? Well, there's teaching content. Okay. That is a very logical answer to this test and to solving the problem. And it is the last thing that I want to do, because teaching someone content is difficult and time consuming. I could do that, but that's usually the last thing we do. That's only for people who really want a huge jump in their score. If somebody wants, 100 points, 200 points, or even more than that sometimes, we don't need to teach any content. We just need to optimize the way they take it. So, a bad football team can look quite a bit better if they have a coach who knows how to minimize the weaknesses of each player and to maximize their strengths. And that's essentially how I tutor. And I'm not revolutionary in that. That's any tutor who is worth their salt is going to do that. If you go to a tutor and they say, I'm going to teach your kid more math and then they'll be better, that is going to be expensive and time consuming. You can make your own decision about what you ought to do as a result of that. But now let's turn to the fact that this is just another number that will be gamed.
Well,
just
let me interrupt you.
Yeah, go ahead.
By stating that you, my friend, have walked into my trap.
Perfect.
So by dangling out their content, you bit the hook, and you bit it the way I thought you would, which is by spitting it out of your mouth. If a student walks in and wants to take the SAT test and doesn't know algebra, just doesn't get it, can't pass the class, and you as a tutor have been asked over the next 20 hours, can you get my son, notice how I assume it's a male, can you get my kid to, get a whatever on the SAT? The wise tutor who very quickly ascertains his kid just doesn't know the stuff is going to go back to that parent and say, there's no amount. The amount of time it would take to teach him algebra is roughly 9 months, an hour a day, 5 days,
right.
I mean, maybe it doesn't take that long, right? Maybe we've elongated it, but I'm going to have to teach him the subject, and that's a different expense and purpose.
Than
teaching them how to play. So notice where we've come. They've realized it's not that some by family advantage or by financial advantage are just wilier at taking the test and others kind of bumble in and fill in the bubbles incorrectly. And, they've said that there's some people who, in order to get to that test, are at a disadvantage. And we want the test taker, the test analyzer, to understand that disadvantage. There are going to be kids who it's been much harder for them to get to the test. And we want that to be evident. So what factors do we think that is? And how can we gather that information and display it somehow so that person evaluating the 800 or the 1200 or the whatever score is on the SAT, what can we put alongside that to help them interpret that score? So now you're set up recognizing that just like there's only so much we can do to game, if you don't know algebra, you're going to do poorly on the SAT, and no amount of tutoring on taking the SAT, no amount of SAT prep is going to overcome that lack of knowledge. And that, I think that's a good thing, right? If you don't know algebra, you're going to flunk college. So, there's got to be some minimums. I am college ready or I'm not.
Right.
And at the same time, we have this fear, but everybody needs to go to college. It almost begs the question, are we changing the purpose of college from higher education to more basic education that everybody needs instead of just some. But talk to us today at least about how you think the adversity score is going to get gamed.
Yeah, so I don't want to dive into like specific strategies or anything like that, but essentially, it's as easy as look at the 31 data points that they use to determine this sort of thing, and then go from there, right? So let's just pick one sort of off the list here. So from your neighborhood, the median family income in your neighborhood, okay, or the percentage of all households in poverty, percentage of housing units that are rentals. Look, people who have lots of money, that the whole scandal broke, people are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to get their kids, people to cheat on the SAT and all this. in a certain way, this has made it easier because now all I have to do as a millionaire, or like not even a millionaire, as someone with quite a lot of money, is go buy a house in a low rent, like significantly adverse, right, disadvantaged part of town, and claim that as my residence. Like it's easier. Like all you have to do is buy a house where you wouldn't want to live, but you can say that you do, right?
So slumlords' kids are at an advantage now, because living up on the hill, their dad owns all the houses down in the bad part of town, and they just put down that address. He owns those houses.
Right, exactly. That's just one. Now, okay, what about for somebody who doesn't have enough money to buy a house, Jason? Okay, that's fine. That's a fair question. But, you know, like families who are switched on to this sort of thing are going to know, they're going to learn the scores of the neighborhoods, and that will be a factor when it comes to home ownership, right? And you can pretty easily manipulate. What if you have an extraordinarily small neighborhood, right, for some strange reason based on the census because of the way it's broken up? Well, then you can start really manipulating this stuff. It's not that hard to, with a little bit of thinking, when you know the hill that you have to climb or the wall you have to get over, it's not that hard to get over the wall.
Right, right.
Right.
Yeah, well, and I think that as we continue to talk about these things, you know, we come back to some pretty fundamental basic questions that I don't want to say there's no answer to them, but it has continued to perplex us for a long time now. Who all should be going to college, for mm-hmm. what purpose, how do we determine if someone is a viable candidate for college entrance, life, etc. I'm very concerned that in a disintegrated, fragmented world, we continue to sort of look at pieces. As you were saying earlier, there's a whole human here. And I've just had too many experiences with people who would score high and not do well. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? There's people that blow me away with their academic acumen, and yet they're not really good students. They're not seeking truth. They're not trying to cultivate wisdom and virtue in their life. They're playing the game. And that's, mm-hmm. I'm glad we've used that analogy. It's the proper analogy, but it's also very, off-putting to hear college entrance reduced to a game, but you're using the exact same term. I had the experience of briefly being head of school at a very large private high school, most of whose graduates went to one of two or three in our state prestigious universities, the ones everybody wants to get into, the ones that are the hardest to get into.
Mm-hmm.
So I invited the head of the admissions department of one of these schools to talk to our parents, who were just, there was just all kinds of fear and all kinds of,
we want to
know what we could do to even more assuredly get it. Keeping in mind, our school already had a pretty good track record.
Right.
But he came and he literally, the reason I used it earlier, he literally used the shell game notion. To define that in his 25 years of being at this school, working his way up through the admissions department, every time they put out there the criteria that they're going to use to delineate who gets in, everybody finds out what that criteria is and begins gaming mm-hmm. towards that. So they have to change the criteria.
Right.
He literally said we have to stay a step ahead of the parents and college counselors, because they're constantly getting in our back pocket trying to figure out how to make sure their kid gets in. And so then I invited somebody else from a private, that was from a public institution. I invited somebody from a private, reputable, prestigious university. Everybody would know it if I said their name. Who had made the bold move to go test optional. You can still turn in your SAT or ACT scores. But when this lady came and talked with us, she had a whole different attitude about it. Now, student body-wise, the size of the two schools as to freshman classes were not identical, but pretty close. Close enough to where it's not just an issue of size like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, statistically relevant.
Statistically relevant. She said, when we put aside that, it's like it opened up a much more personal conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We know our freshmen by the time they get to us. We've had enough personal interaction with them. We have a pretty high retention rate. We have a pretty high graduation rate because we're confidently placing the people who ought to be at our university in our university. And having the tough conversations up front, she says, she asked the parents, would you be more discouraged if your child didn't get into our school or got in and couldn't make it?
Ooh.
And afterwards, most of the parents said that was the comment that meant the most to them because they recognized, well, it would be much more damaging to us and my child to get them in some high-level university that they're not capable of running with and mm-hmm. fail than to be placed properly, maybe in a quote-unquote lesser prestigious place, but that fit sure. them, and they had success. You know, they mm-hmm. actually got a degree.
Yeah.
Maybe not from Ivy League school, but from whatever.
Sure.
I still scratch my head over trying to distinguish why some schools just have better reputations than others, but I ramble on this. We have plenty of sure. episodes we can do on higher education,
yeah.
but this, I think this adversity score is not going to solve the problem, but I think I agree with you that it's a natural outcome of the way we've been attempting to solve the college admissions issue. You know, more data, just give yeah. us more numbers.
And yeah. It just moves the bullseye for those students and parents who are going to do whatever it takes to get into wherever they want. And it sort of, you know, will temporarily probably end up looking good, right? Like I think anytime they shake things up, like there is this time where not as many people know the game. And so it really is a little bit more, flat-footed, like everyone's sort of caught flat-footed. And so you just have to react and do the best you can. And, oh, okay, great. So, you know, if a kid is a junior, they may not have a lot of time to change their adversity score. Although I promise you people will find ways. But, you know, for those who are in eighth grade, like, the parents are already sort of going, okay, like, well, then what we'll need to do is move here. We can figure this out. I'll do this. Oh, if you don't take this job, whatever. And, you know, we'll get it figured out. Like, we can send them to this school and they only do a half day anyway. And then we can just tutor him in all of this. And, you know, that'll boost his adversity score or what have you. So there will be strategies to overcome or to game the system just like there always are. But yeah, I mean, that's the modern problem, right? Because as soon as it's mastered, they'll give us another number.
Yeah, a quick story that relates to that. When I invited the gentleman from the state school everybody wanted to get into in my state, we had to change venue. I was overwhelmed and of course stupidly didn't have any sort of an RSVP or anything. You know, I was thinking mostly parents of the high school students. I knew most senior parents wouldn't show up. Their kids are already pretty much headed where they're headed. But
right.
But I figured the freshmen, sophomores, even juniors would have a pretty good showing. And it was way more than that. And I go, where'd all these people come from? So the gentleman conducting the evening, once we got moved, he says, well, there's obviously a lot of you here, you know, and it shows you the kind of graduates we want your graduates at my school. And it's obviously because you guys are very into education. Raise your hand if your child is above the 10th grade, and you know, all right, above the 9th grade, you know, and so I was expecting. He kept asking. So anybody got like a 7th grader, and a number of hands went up. And he says, well, whatever I say tonight, he says, is there anybody whose child is under the 7th grade? And he starts calling on them. And one of them was a 2nd grade parent, which was shocking to me.
There you go.
But he said, I'm not trying to be rude, man, but you might as well leave now.
Yeah.
Nothing I say to you is going to be true 10 years from now.
Right.
It just changes that often and that much.
Yep.
And it's one of the things he said to the parents is, look, many of you think getting into college is like it was when you got into college. Erase that from your mind.
Yep.
So it's just interesting to see how often it changes. I agree with you. I think that briefly it cleans things up and then it gets all muddied again. And so the changes have to come. But to kind of, if I can, put a good ending to this, because I'm mindful, I don't want our podcast to become the place where we go to get depressed.
Thank you. Good. Yes.
There's hope in all this. A good education is always the best route.
Yes.
To wherever you ought to be. Mm-hmm. I've had people. I just recently have been working with a senior who is not going to college. At a college preparatory school.
Awesome.
He's going to the military.
Okay.
And he and I have had a number of conversations. In particular, I'm going to mention a branch of the service here, and I love all branches of the service, but I think you'll know why I'm mentioning this in particular. Of all the branches to choose, this is a student that's a straight A student, has been for 4 years with me. He's one of the brighter students I've had in my seminar. Mm-hmm. I'm going to miss him in that regard. But he's a few months from now, he intends to be graduating from Parris Island as a Marine.
Wow.
As an enlisted Marine.
Mm-hmm.
And he's concerned that, you know, a lot of this stuff that I got at the school is not going to be that useful. And I said, man, to whatever extent this stuff has produced in you wisdom and virtue, there's no place to cash in those chips other than in life.
I mean,
we need wise and virtuous Marines and farmers and physicists. Mm-hmm. I mean, college is the right place for the right person. The best way to get there is to be the right person and provide your child with the right education that gets them prepared for whatever they face in life. I have no fear about a well-educated person that should be in college finding the right college for themselves. We have to be careful who we're listening to and helping us decide what that college is and where it is and what the criteria are for choosing it and that sort of thing. But that's a whole another conversation.
Yep. As we're closing, hey, everybody who has a high schooler, maybe take a look at some of those colleges that are test optional and see how they might differ from some of the other schools. They might be a good fit. They might not. I don't know. I'm just saying, check it out.